a crime to disclose classified information, and everyone in the IC community knows that. But this takes it a step around it, sort of like the penumbra. And it says, well, if it's related to classified information, you can't have contact, and my favorite is unplanned or unintentional contact with a member of the news media on something that, on information that is related to classified information. You know, it's rather broad, and I would be surprised if, you know, press and media organizations didn't try to challenge it.
So unplanned or unanticipated means you could be standing in a coffee line with a reporter and bump elbows and exchange pleasantries and find out, one, that that person's in the media, and they could find out you're with the CIA, for example, and then you've got to report that? And that's how it could be interpreted from the language.
Well, unplanned or unintentional disclosures of information.
Oh, not just contact related with the medium.
Yeah, that's related to classified information. You have to disclose that. You have to disclose that. You know, over the last decade or more, even before the last decade, but certainly the last decade with post 9/11 and the two wars, Congress and both administrations, the current administration, the previous administration, have been very concerned about leaks to the media. And people talking on background, which then leads to the storyline that then the press then tries to find the piece of classified information. And so they've been very concerned about that. And the president even ran, you know, part of his platform when he ran for president was that he was going to have a zero tolerance for leaks of classified information. You get the sense that they haven't really figured out how to sort of get on top of it or get in front of it, and that's what this directive is about. So even if you're talking about something, and that's, you know, how do you define matters that are related to classified information? Very broad. You know, it feels very broad. It is now, you know, an unauthorized disclosure. And if you do engage in that kind of conduct, this directive says, you know, you potentially could you lose your security clearance, which for many people, that's their livelihood.
I'm just wondering if this is something where there is a pendulum that has swung one way, of course, with the leaks from Edward Snowden, and now it is swinging back, perhaps too far, and the government is seen as clamping down. Is this something that we have seen throughout history, and so we expect it to somehow swing back?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you look back in history, certainly during times of war or conflict, the government, right, this entity, gets very concerned about what it considers to be information important to the national security of our country. And, you know, and it certainly does swing. I think that this policy is very interesting. It almost brings, as a lawyer, it brings like a smile to my face. It's almost amusing that they could try to dictate what people say that's not, you know, that is not directly classified information. And it, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, how that's going to get implemented successfully. I mean, I absolutely believe that there will be court challenges to this, but in the interim, I suspect it will have an effect on the workforce to really clamp down on them and have the effect they intend.
We're speaking with Deborah Roth, a partner at the law firm Shaw, Branford & Roth. And, of course, none of this would have stopped an Edward Snowden, if that's in fact what is in their mind, because, first of all, he wasn't a federal employee. He was a contractor, but he did have security clearance. But he deliberately downloaded documents with full force of knowledge of what he was doing, ready to flee to Russia, of all places. So it seems like they're hitting the wrong button with the wrong hammer here.
Edward Snowden sort of revealed himself to the world that he was the leaker. But one of the biggest challenges, Tom, was who was the leaker, because this was classified information in those cases, and the disclosure of it is a crime, and the degree of the crime depends upon how the content of the information and the intent of the release. So the problem that the government had, the FBI had, was trying to figure out who was the source of the leak. And if you ask the reporters, well, of course, they're asserting their privilege not to disclose their source. And so the government, particularly the FBI, had a very difficult time isolating who is the source of the leak. With this directive, one of the most interesting things is you have to self-disclose. So they're counting on people, people who work in the intelligence community, federal civil servants, to be very honest, right? And that if they have any kind of disclosure, authorized or unauthorized, the government's going to have a record of who you spoke to. So, you know, they're trying to narrow down in the event of a leak. That's how I read this directive. They're trying to narrow down in the event of an unauthorized disclosure of classified information who the potential source could be. Now they have a record of who spoke to the press on what subject matter, either intended, you know, an authorized disclosure or an unauthorized disclosure. So for me, that's how I read the directive. That's one of the purposes. But, you know, is to have a registry of who's talking to the press.
As an intelligence employee, what are your legal rights if you're accused of discussing particularly unclassified material with a reporter under this policy? Do you have any rights at all?
Well, they make it sound, Emily, like you don't, and that you could lose your security clearance and or your employment. Certainly, you know, if the government acts on what it says it would do here in the directive by trying to attempt to take away their security clearance, they have rights in that process. When the government tries to take your clearance, you have some limited rights to dispute the charges against you. And I suspect some of that will play out in that forum.
You know, this is just the latest sign of the intelligence community trying to control information. But when you talk about their own employees, it certainly paints a picture of a community where probably people go to work and they're suspicious of their colleagues or they're worried about their boss. It just doesn't seem like a very pleasant place to work.
Obviously, Edward Snowden's leak was the tipping point. Before Edward Snowden, your average federal worker in the intelligence community was not the leaker. They were generally people very connected to a specific piece of information who felt very strongly about it. So I don't know that up until now, federal workers in the intelligence community looked at each other with an element of mistrust. But after Edward Snowden and the reaction the government's having to it, I suspect it's getting to be, a rather, I don't want to say scary, but a difficult place to work. And they can feel the pressure of the government coming down on them. You know, the whole, you have to tell us if you ran into a member of the media on the line at Starbucks and had a conversation about, you know, world peace, right? That seems to be like we're getting into some very overreaching areas, and I think people in the intelligence community will probably start reacting to that, you know, these requirements that feel they go beyond sort of the confines of the established law.
I do want to bring into this conversation another intelligence community policy because it's related, mm-hmm. and it was published by the Federation of American Scientists just a couple of weeks ago. But it seems like the Director of National Intelligence is stopping both former and current employees from entering discussions about things like what Edward Snowden has revealed, because it says they can't talk about leaked material,
right.
Material they didn't leak, but somebody else did.
Right. And the rationale behind that policy is that if you, as somebody who, you know, is publicly known, was a member of the intelligence community, and now you're former, right? You're retired, you've left government, and you talk about that information, you cite to it, you're not the leaker, but you talk about this information. The concern is that you are giving credence and credibility to an information piece of information that the government has not confirmed or denied. And it's a very interesting attempt at restricting speech. Very interesting, because they weren't the actual disclosure of the information. You're not allowed to comment on it, and that is very interesting under First Amendment issues.
Well, does it go too far in terms of violating?
You know, it feels like it does, particularly because they're no longer employed by the government. When you're employed by the government, then your First Amendment rights become restricted, because between you and the government, it's sort of like you and an employer. The government becomes an employer, and what you say about what you do at work or what your employer does, the Supreme Court has held up until recently. There is a case pending before the Supreme Court in this term. They have held that the government gets to regulate your official speech, your First Amendment rights get balanced against you in favor of the government as an employer, you know, wanting to be able to regulate your speech. But if you're a former employee and you're no longer in an employer-employment relationship, it feels like they've stepped outside, could have stepped outside the First Amendment. I'm not a First Amendment attorney, but I assure you they're out there, and that somebody is going to challenge this, you know, that second directive, Emily, that you're referring to.